Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The closer you look at the in vitro fertilization industry, two things strike you. How lightly it is regulated, virtually unregulated. That seems very odd. And how closely it is tied to some rather nefarious practices, some of them that may at first seem kind of altruistic, end up being very, very bad for women and children. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about an in vitro fertilization bill in the U.S. Senate, Dr. Katie French-Talento. She's an epidemiologist, executive director of the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries, and author of a column for The Federalist titled, Why Making Babies in Test Tubes is Not Pro-Life. Dr. Talento, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Tell us about this Senate bill introduced by Republican Roger Marshall and Democrat Cory Booker.
Yeah, sure. So just to be clear, it has not been introduced yet. It's being circulated and it's drafted and they're seeking feedback. So now's the time to provide feedback. But yeah, it's looking to be introduced and it's called the Hope with Fertility Services Act. And it would require all health plans that are regulated by the federal insurance law called ERISA to provide coverage for in vitro fertilization. It has to be pretty comprehensive, almost total coverage for IVF. And those ERISA regulated plans are the plans that cover most of American workers and their families. So some smaller employers are not covered by these plans, but most larger employers are. And what it would do is it would require, if you cover any OBGYN services, you have to cover this in your plan. And it's very broad. The type of IVF services that must be included include everything from egg donation, sperm donation, potentially even using a third party, like a surrogate. And it's pretty comprehensive. And it's for anyone. It's not just heterosexual married couples, but it's any employee who's covered by the plan if they're infertile for any reason, which could include gay couples or single parents are parents to be. And every employer is required to submit a report to the Secretary of Labor outlining how its insurance utilization management tools like pre-authorization and other techniques that plans use are not inhibiting access to IVF. And the Secretary then has to report to Congress every year which employers are compliant and which aren't. So it's extremely onerous and unworkable for employers. It will dramatically increase costs for employers, not to mention the obvious and manifold pro-life problems.
IVF supporters are saying that this bill is pro-family and pro-life. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, so, you know, I would say that it's not pro-life when you're supporting an industry where only 10% of these lab-created embryos are born alive. The others are discarded or they're indefinitely frozen in freezers for years and years. It's not pro-life and it's not pro-family when you're implanting so many embryos into a mother to try to get one to take that you have to actually abort more than one. So, you know, you'll implant, say, 4 or 5 embryos into the mother, and then if 3 of them actually implant and start to grow, that's too many. It's not safe for all of them to grow. And so they'll abort 2 of them so that one does well, or they'll abort 1 of them. That's euphemistically referred to as selective reduction. You know, they hide all the things that they're really doing to kill off these tiny humans with euphemistic scientific terms. There's genetic screening that's going on, sex selection that's going on. So it's a modern day eugenics on an unprecedented scale. It's not pro-life. And then when you talk about pro-family, I mean, this is really going to facilitate the intentional design of children who are intentionally, by design, fatherless or motherless, when we're talking about single parents undergoing these procedures or gay couples that are not offering both a mother and a father to these children. And they're using often a surrogate, usually a poor woman who's financially desperate, and they're exploiting her. They're commodifying her womb and they're renting that womb. There have been horrific situations where surrogates in Australia and elsewhere, you know, it turns out that the baby has Down syndrome or has some other problem or is the wrong sex, and the gay couple wants the surrogate and in fact insisted upon it in their contract with her that she abort a baby if they choose to. And there have been women who've refused to do this. They, of course, get attached to their children, and then they end up in court, or they don't get paid, or all manner of legal threats come against them. This is an ongoing problem. Then you have the divorced or breaking up couples who have embryos in freezers who decide, you know what, we don't really want these anymore. Or one of them wants to keep the embryos and the other one doesn't. And they end up in court fighting over these bizarre ethical custody situations. This is not a pro-family industry, despite what I think many people of goodwill have been led to believe. And it's certainly true that pro-life people and Christian people have used IVF, and perhaps they've done it where they've only created one embryo and only implanted that one embryo at a time. And they might say, hey, we're not engaging in these unethical practices or these abortifacient practices, but I would argue that they're paying this industry to do these procedures for them, and they are facilitating an absolutely corrupt and craven industry that is a huge problem when it comes to protecting life. More embryos are killed every year by this industry than even by Planned Parenthood.
How closely is the IVF industry regulated?
Oh, it's not regulated at all. It's certainly not at the federal level. And there are some states that have tried to impose, you know, reasonable procedures on them, but very, very few. If anything, it's one of the least regulated industries in the country, especially in healthcare. There's been this sort of public policy frenzy of late related to IVF that was instigated by a case in Alabama where a couple had their embryos frozen in a IVF facility, and some random stranger walked in off the street into this facility, stuck their hand down into the freezer when it was so cold that they dropped the test tube and killed the embryo. And that couple sued the IVF facility for wrongful death of their children. And that's the case that led to all this frenzy that we've seen of late, where the Alabama Supreme Court basically said, yeah, it is a baby, that these are humans and it was wrongful death. And that led to chaos because, of course, it put the entire IVF industry in Alabama in trouble, because if what they're doing to unnecessary or discarded embryos is wrongful death, then that would put them out of business, because that's an essential component of their business model. And that's why you then had various politicians coming out and saying, oh, no, we're not trying to shut down the IVF industry. But it just shows that how unregulated these clinics are, where who can just walk in and destroy human beings. And that's what's going on. These are beings, they're alive, and they're human. I mean, they're not lizard embryos in there. So what else can we call them but human beings?
How does the IVF industry's expansion into surrogacy that you mentioned before, surrogacy services, how does that commodify both women and children?
Well, you know, too often we have this idea that surrogacy is this beautiful, altruistic thing. And perhaps there are cases when when your sister might serve as a surrogate for you, and she's not doing it for money, she's doing it out of love for you, perhaps. But very often, we are seeing the growth of a commercial surrogacy market. In fact, there is human trafficking in this business, where there, especially in other countries, there are farms of women that have been trafficked to be surrogates. And so we're seeing poor, exploited women around the world. And even here in America, you've got lower income women who are doing this just for out of financial desperation. No woman would just randomly put her body through that out of altruism unless they were very close to the couple. And so you don't have third-party surrogates for the most part who were doing this for anything but money. And their wombs are being commodified and their bodies are being exploited and used in a transactional way. That is not how God intended for reproduction to take place. It doesn't honor women and their dignity. And instead, it forces them to create children and sell those children. That's essentially what they're doing. They're selling their wombs and they're selling the children that are gestated in their womb. Even if those children are not genetically theirs, such as when you're using a different source of the egg than the surrogate, that woman, of course, gets very close to the child growing in her womb. And more importantly, the child has only known that womb, has only known the voice of her mother and the people in her mother's life. Those are the sounds, those are the human voices that baby has heard and bonded with and whose endocrine system actually reacts when they hear those voices. Separating a child from the mother where they've lived for the past 9 months is traumatic. And immediately you're placed in the hands of two gay men or in the hands of a different couple that they've never had any interaction with. And you think that these things don't matter because the baby's so young, but there are many, many developmental factors that where babies are imprinting with parents early on, and that skin-to-skin contact that we're all told is so important, that day one contact with your mother. Even the hormones and chemicals in our bodies react to each other, the mother and baby, and you're disrupting all of that with a surrogate. Now, we see this happening in adoption, and we see this happening in foster care, but those are always the result of a tragedy. There's an inability for the mother to raise the child, or there's the loss of a parent, or neglect or abuse. These are always tragedies, and adoption can be a beautiful and compassionate plan B, but it is a plan B for children, and it's not the absolute best plan A that we all would hope for every child. So I just don't think that we can call this industry anything other than the exploitation of women and children, and where we're basically exploiting the poor and the vulnerable, including the unborn, and to meet the needs of adults, the needs and desires of adults. And it's not fair. We should not be making motherless and fatherless children by design. Tragedies create motherless children. Tragedies create fatherless children. But we shouldn't be doing it on purpose from the get-go. While there are situations where you've got an infertile couple that's married and they only make one embryo and they only implant one embryo and the biological mother gestates that baby, that's sort of an ideal case, which is the minority of cases. That's just not what usually happens in IVF.
Dr. Katie French-Talento is our guest. We're talking about her column for The Federalist, Why Making Babies in Test Tubes is Not Pro-Life. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Lutherans for Life has numerous resources on in vitro fertilization that you can download for free at lutheransforlife.org. Type in vitro in the search engine in the upper right-hand corner, lutheransforlife.org. We'll talk about the eugenics marketing by the IVF industry next.
So if you think that, you know, you still live in a country where there's going to be some respect for your beliefs, you know, you could end up, you know, on the wrong end of a criminal prosecution.
Aaron Wren of the American Conservative talking about his presentation at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And so that might be, of course, unfair or in many ways, but it's also reality. If you don't understand the changes that have happened in the world, then you're not going to be able to make sense of what you see around you. And again, you might actually disadvantage yourself by taking actions that 20, 30 years ago would have been no big deal, but today might destroy your life.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wren making the case for Christianity in a negative world at this year's Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. You'll find additional information, and you can register at issuesetc.org.
This is Pastor Matthew Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The LCMS operates the second largest parochial school system in the United States. What can you expect from a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school? There's one race, the human race. And Jesus died for the sins of every man, woman, and child from every land and every nation. Life begins at conception. All life is precious from womb to tomb. And every student, parent, and teacher is created in the very image of God. There's right and wrong, and we know which is which from the Ten Commandments. There are only two sexes, male and female, He created them. Marriage is the lifelong union of one man and one woman. There's such a thing as objective, absolute truth, and it's found in the person and work of Jesus Christ and His Word. To find a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school near you, visit lcms.org/schools.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Worshiping creation? This is Ken Ham, editor of the popular apologetic series, The New Answers Books. Today is Earth Day. For some, this is a day to remind others to plant trees, reduce pollution, or clean up trash. But for many, this is almost a religious day. If you've ever attended an Earth Day celebration, you might have seen New Age crystals for people to channel through, or other materials to worship Mother Earth. Yes, for many, it's a religious day to worship Earth. And modern Earth worship comes from the evolutionary worldview, which says we owe our very existence to the Earth. Therefore, nature is what matters. Human life is the problem impacting Earth. But that's not the biblical view of creation. But more on that tomorrow.
Discover more about the biblical worldview of stewardship and the environment at AnswersRadio.com or listen to this program again at AnswersRadio.com.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about an in vitro fertilization bill in the U.S. Senate. Dr. Katie French-Talento is our guest of the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. Dr. Talento, talk about the marketing angle of eugenics by the IVF industry.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So the eugenics happens in a variety of ways. One way is how they shop for, or how, you know, the patients, the customers of IVF can shop for the sperm and the eggs for their baby if they're using sperm and eggs outside of their own. And so in that case, in the sperm, I don't even like to call this sperm donation or egg donation. These are transactions. These are commercial transactions. So this is selling of sperm and selling of eggs. And they market the eggs and sperm often based on the race of the so-called donor, the IQ, the educational achievement, the financial achievement, the fitness, the height, and eye color. You can shop for eggs and sperm on that basis by all these sort of gross eugenic factors with respect to the so-called donor. So that's one aspect of eugenics. The second aspect is once the embryos have been created, they are subjected then to a variety of genetic screens, including finding out what sex the embryo is. And if they're deemed to be sort of genetically inferior, let's say that they have, it looks as if they have Down syndrome, or it looks as if maybe there's some gene marker that would suggest that the embryo is not quite fit as one of the other embryos, they will just discard those embryos that are deemed inferior, or they'll implant them less. You know, they'll be in the, they won't implant them first. They'll just throw them in the freezer indefinitely in case all the other so-called better embryos don't take. So this is kind of disgusting, and it's couched in all these types of euphemisms that I suggested earlier. But there, in fact, have been a study or two that I heard about where embryos that would otherwise be discarded, that would be deemed by the IVF industry to be inferior, are actually implanted, and they turn out to be fine. They turn out to be absolutely perfectly healthy children. And so it's not clear exactly how good these markers really are at predicting the health of a child. And also, you can have a child with Down syndrome who's perfectly healthy. They just have Down syndrome, and they're lovely in many, many ways because of that. So this is sick. And, you know, we're seeing that kind of eugenic attitude, especially about Down syndrome and other genetic or developmental so-called conditions or diseases, we're seeing these children are aborted often in countries like the Netherlands or other Scandinavian countries where you don't even have Down syndrome happening anymore because they're always aborted because of these prenatal screens. Now, that's not exactly the same thing in IVF. They're testing these embryos before they're even implanted. But this whole ethos of eugenics is eliminating these people. They're eliminating people with Down syndrome from our planet, slowly but surely. There's something like 85% of all unborn children with Down syndrome are aborted. So this is definitely a eugenic tendency, and the IVF industry is a big part of that.
So you have mentioned several times here the freezing of embryos. Why is that unacceptable?
Well, I mean, would you like to live in a freezer for the rest of your life? I mean, I think you would consider that if someone did that to you or if someone did that to a one-week-old baby, it would certainly be a crime, right? Like, why is it okay to do that to younger people? If we believe in life from conception to natural death, then we have to believe that this is a crime against these little embryos. These are human beings, and we shouldn't be allowed to do this to born people. Why should we do it to unborn people?
So you also mentioned illegal activity, human trafficking, and even worse scenarios that may be manipulating the IVF industry for illegal activity. Talk about those.
Yeah, well, there have been some horrific findings of surrogate farms where poor women are trafficked by nefarious cartels and criminal organizations to just serve as breeders. In fact, there's a movie called Breeders, a documentary about this, and it's really scary. And then you also have the egg extraction industry where there are many, many women overseas who are either trafficked into this or they are paid very small amounts and they are injected with all the carcinogenic hormones and drugs that hyperstimulate their ovaries and can cause cancer later and many other health problems. And all this to extract their eggs for rich women and rich couples' needs overseas in the West. So this is what happens when you start to commodify the human body. This is what happens. We've seen it happen in organ donation. When you commercialize parts of humans, then bad actors take that and exploit it and try to profit from that commercialization even more. And they start to broker and traffic in those commercialized body parts and bodies. Of course, this is what's going to happen. And then, of course, you have the subsidy of the pornography industry by the IVF industry, where typically when they're extracting sperm for sale from so-called sperm donors, then they offer them access to videos and print materials that are pornographic that they've purchased, and by purchasing, they're supporting the pornography industry so that those prospective sperm donors can masturbate and produce the samples that they then sell. So this is a really corrupt, and this industry is supporting a variety of other bad industries that we don't support. And we shouldn't support this kind of exploitation of people, both in the pornography industry, the egg so-called donation or egg extraction industry, and the surrogate industry.
Instead of cutting the IVF industry in for more insurance money, what needs to be done?
So I think that if we're going to say that IVF has a role in our culture, and I'm not really willing to say that, I don't think that this industry can be sanitized, even though there are good people who have used it and in limited and, you know, non-embryo destructive ways, given how that is just the minority of situations in IVF, I don't think the industry can be sanitized. However, if there are states, there seem to be a lot of politicians that are very scared about saying something like that. And if that's the case, then, and they want to try to limit the harm of this industry and try to mitigate it, then I would recommend that we impose regulations that would, first of all, outright forbid the intentional creation of motherless and fatherless children. So this needs to be couples who are a mother and a father. That is what children need and deserve and have a natural right to. We need to have rights for donor-conceived children to find their fathers and mothers and to be able to contact them. The idea that these parents because that's what they are, should have the right to remain anonymous is unacceptable. And there's a whole donor-conceived children community out there that are now adults and have been harmed and can very articulately document the harm that they've experienced by being separated from their natural parents. So I think we need to certainly have limitations on how long embryos can be in freezers. We should ban genetic screening. We should absolutely ban sex selection, which happens regularly. I mean, there are examples of certain celebrities like Paris Hilton saying that she used IVF so that she'd only have boys. These basic human protections should be imposed on this industry. And then you have the situation where you've got a clinic like in Alabama that just did not have proper security protocols. I mean, at the very least, these human tissues, at least, if we're not even going to think of them as human beings, these are, you know, medical tissues and should be protected the way we would expect any health data to be protected. You can't just walk in off the street to a clinic and extract health information from their medical records department. You can't just see medical records. Why can you walk in there and grab a test tube filled with little embryos? Where do we even start? There's so much to regulate in this industry. That's a much longer conversation. But I think we need to start the conversation around what reasonable regulations should be and where, if we can't go all the way, that we should at least do some basic protections.
Dr. Katie French-Talento is an epidemiologist, executive director of the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries, and author of a column for The Federalist titled Why Making Babies in Test Tubes is Not Pro-Life. You'll find a link to it at issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. Talento, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Todd.
We will discuss improving pro-life messaging with Dr. Carrie Gress of the Ethics and Public Policy Center next.
At the heart of Lutherans for Life is good news. Good news that brings hope to a culture so focused on death. Lutherans for Life equips Lutherans and their neighbors to be gospel-motivated voices for life. Lutherans for Life believes God gives the gift of life to all people, from the moment of conception until natural death. Learn more about how you and your congregation can help bring hope and healing to life issues at LutheransForLife.org.
Many educational institutions are governed by the whims of culture and are increasingly hostile to the Word of God. In contrast, Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, provides classical Lutheran education rooted in God's Word for students preschool through grade 12. Simply put, we equip students to stand firm in the faith through solid education focused on wisdom and virtue. We offer in-person instruction as well as live online classes for remote learning. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155.